This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
People are dying here. Please help. Please, please, please help us. Bring us food or take us out so quickly. But please start with food.
That was an unidentified miner who is among hundreds of illegal miners trapped underground for months in South Africa, pleading for rescue and food. Details coming up. Also, Mozambique swore in a new parliament with the capital streets deserted after the opposition leader called for a strike. And official results say Chad's ruling party won the parliamentary election that the main opposition party boycotted. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. In South Africa, a video has surfaced from a disused gold mine where hundreds of illegal miners have been trapped for more than 6 months. The video shows more than 100 dead bodies, and angry mining community rights groups are accusing the government of committing a massacre by restricting water and food. Tusoko Malo reports from Stilfontein.
A video shot in the mine in Stilfontein, Northwest Province, starts with an unnamed miner showing piles of bodies tightly wrapped in plastic. Some are clearly highly decomposed. The video ends with the miner making a passionate plea for rescue and food.
People are dying here. Please help. Please, please, please help us. Bring us food or take us out so quickly. But please start with food because we don't have power. We don't have power. We are already dead.
Hundreds of miners have been trapped for months in the Stilfontein mine. Speaking at a media briefing a few meters away from the shaft, human rights lawyer Mameklo Sebei said the video shows what can only be described as a cruel massacre by the South African government. He said they've begged the government for months to allow food and water down the mine and rescue the miners quickly, but that it refused. Recently, allegations were made that police barred community volunteers from sending food to the miners for 13 days. Human rights groups claim the deaths were proof that the government lied when it said miners were choosing to stay underground fearing arrest if they emerged.
This is a Stilfontein massacre. And this massacre, which is what it is really a bloody culmination of a treacherous policy that was pursued by the government.
Zinzi Tom, a community member whose brother has been underground for over 6 months, was in tears at the media briefing. Tom successfully obtained a court order compelling the government to start the current rescue efforts. The government says it never refused to rescue the miners, but it needed time to put together financial resources and a rescue plan. Makosonke Butelezi is the Department of Mineral Resources spokesperson.
They pleaded that they do not have money and they have already spent their money on sealing the shaft. So it's not true that we were forced by the court. We agreed at the court that we will make sure that we facilitate the process to see to it that we retrieve the remaining illegal miners underground.
A rescue team has brought rescue machinery to the site to start retrieving the miners and the bodies. It is illegal in South Africa for independent miners to enter mine shafts that companies have abandoned because they are no longer profitable. The government says the miners are unsafe and that it loses revenue when illegally extracted ore is sold. In addition, the government says many of the illegal miners are victims of trafficking or forced labor. Tusoko Malo for VOA News in Stilfontein, Northwest Province of South Africa.
France starts 2025 with a further drawdown of its military presence in its former African colonies as fresh tensions ignited this week with controversial remarks by French President Emmanuel Macron. What does it mean for Paris's influence in Africa moving forward? Lisa Bryant reports for VOA.
Following Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso, Chad, Senegal, and now ally Ivory Coast have asked France to withdraw its troops from their soil. The reasons vary, from growing anti-French sentiment to calls for greater sovereignty and strengthening ties with other foreign powers. But the impact is the same.
There is a clear collapse of French policy in Africa.
Thierry Virgoulan is a researcher at the French Institute for International Relations Africa Center.
Of course, the withdrawal of the French troops and basically the end of the French military presence in Africa is a symbol of that collapse.
French-Africa relations haven't improved in recent days. On Monday, President Emmanuel Macron suggested some Sahel countries had forgotten to say thank you to French troops for spearheading a decade-long fight against Islamist insurgencies. That drew sharp criticism from leaders in Chad and Senegal. French authorities say Macron's remarks were taken out of context. Jean-Pierre Molny is director of the French Institute for International and Strategic Affairs think tank. He believes France needs to be less focused on the immediate fallout and instead concentrate on longer-term ties with Francophone African countries that are today rejecting Paris. He says France should think more about development and sharing the future of Africa's security and less about adopting a big brother attitude. Macron's government announced plans last year to reduce its military presence on the continent, where it also has troops in Gabon and Djibouti, and make it more responsive to countries' demands. France has also expanded ties beyond Francophone Africa. Its two biggest trading partners, for example, are now Nigeria and South Africa. But analyst Virgoulan, for one, predicts France's long-term influence in Africa will remain limited, at best.
There's very little that the French government can do at the moment, and this is very much playing in favor of Russia and other countries that are not Western.
He believes France's strategic priorities will also shift to potential conflicts in Europe. Lisa Bryant, VOA News, Paris.
One of Africa's top security research organizations says terrorist groups on the continent are recruiting children as young as 11 and training them as extremist fighters. The study says the groups are grooming youngsters online and through social media while still using traditional methods of physical recruitment in disaffected communities. Darren Taylor reports.
As Africa becomes increasingly developed, and technology spreads into even hard-to-reach villages, jungles, and deserts, more people gain access to the internet and cell phones. Martin Ewe of South Africa's Institute for Security Studies, the ISS, says children are very attracted to social media networks and extremist websites, making them vulnerable to indoctrination.
Through social media, you get contact with people. And then you show interest. From that interest, you show commitment. And once they know that you are committed and that you cannot betray, you are then recruited. And then they ask you to buy your own ticket, which is, again, proof of that commitment. Mm-hmm. And once you buy your own ticket to fly, and then they tell you, look, once you are with us, we will take care of you. We will provide for all your needs, and you'll become one of us.
The ISS investigation focused on the latest recruitment methods used by some of Africa's most active terrorist organizations, including Islamic State, or ISIS, and Boko Haram. Many of these groups advocate for violent takeovers of legitimate governments and replacing them with caliphates that implement harsh Islamic laws. They also commit atrocities, including massacres and beheadings. ISS security expert Willem Els says extremists are increasingly using children to help them achieve their objectives and training them to commit acts of terror.
The modus operandi that we saw that they follow when it comes to the recruitment and also the radicalization of their recruits, it forms a pattern. That is where we got our assessment from. It is fairly widespread. We saw that in West Africa, there are groups like, for instance, Boko Haram, the ISIS group, ISWAP. We also saw the JNIM, that is an Al-Qaeda-affiliated group, but also saw in Somalia, that is also Al-Qaeda with your Al-Shabaab, but also then in DRC and in Mozambique that are affiliated with ISIS.
Johannesburg-based anti-crime activist Yusuf Abramji recently helped South African authorities stop a teenager from allegedly trying to join Islamic State.
Well, I received a call on from family members of the 15-year-old missing Cape Town girl, and during the discussion it emerged that there was suspicion that she may be involved with ISIS. Some documents were allegedly found in her room. Investigations are ongoing, and these investigations will take time. Remember, we're talking here of social media, we're talking of an internet, we're talking of tickets that were booked possibly to the Middle East. The many questions that need to be answered include whether or not she was aided and abetted by anyone locally, who paid for the tickets, how did she manage to board a flight being a minor.
Abramji says terrorists recruiting children isn't new. What's new, he says, is that the recruits are getting younger. The youngest fighter the ISS documented is just 11, but El says fundamentalist organizations have recruited younger children. He says the crisis is growing in South Africa, a country previously not affected much by extremism.
If we do not attend to it, it can explode in our face and come back to hide us. We saw that South Africa was very reluctant to act against terrorism. We've been on warnings by the US Department of Treasury. They flagged three individuals. Later last year, they flagged another three for terror funding, but also for training and the movement of funds from South Africa to places like Somalia and Uganda.
A big problem across Africa, say many analysts, is the weakness of intelligence departments. This means security agencies often don't get information about terrorist activities, including child recruitment, until it's too late. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Chad's ruling party won a majority in last month's parliamentary election that the main opposition party boycotted. The election results announced late Saturday showed the ruling party won 124 out of 188 seats, while the voter turnout was 51.5%. The main opposition boycotted the election. The Associated Press reports President Mahamat Idriss Deby had said the election would pave the way for the era of decentralization, referring to the distribution of power beyond the national government to the provincial and municipal levels. Analysts predicted the ruling party's win, saying the election would consolidate the political power of Deby, who won last year's disputed presidential election after ruling as a military leader for 3 years. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is 1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. Mozambique swore in its new parliament today with the streets of the capital deserted after the opposition leader called for a strike to protest the highly disputed elections. The French news agency AFP says two smaller opposition parties boycotted the opening ceremony. They said they did not accept the outcome of the October election, while the incoming president, Daniel Chapo, called for calm and unity after months of deadly unrest. Opposition leader Venancio Mondlane, who is popular with Mozambique's marginalized youth, claims the results were rigged in favor of Chapo's Frelimo party that has been in power for 50 years. He urged his supporters to demonstrate our refusal of the official election result with a national strike from today to Wednesday, when Chapo is due to be sworn in as president. C Situated in the Indian Ocean, off the east coast of Africa, the Seychelles is in the middle of a key heroin smuggling route and has among the highest rates of heroin use in the world. The strategically located archipelago is also a place where the U.S. and China is vying for influence. Kate Bartlett brings us this story from the main island of Mahé, with details on the heroin trade and what the U.S. and China are doing to help.
Picture postcard Seychelles is a place of idyllic beauty, loved by foreign tourists. But there's a dark side to this archipelago of just 100,000 people. It has some of the highest global rates of heroin use per capita. Romeo Pierre, a recovering heroin user, is on his way to get his daily dose of methadone.
I got into drug use when I was in school.
The 23-year-old uses methadone to help with withdrawal symptoms.
I lost my dad when I was 8 years old. He was murdered. So I lost him at a very young age, and it had a very bad effect on me.
A 2023 study funded by the US and European Union found some 10% of the population here is addicted to heroin. To fight the problem, the government rolled out a methadone program as well as a needle exchange initiative. Hans Radegond, head of the Seychelles Coast Guard, says his country, located in the Indian Ocean, is in the middle of one of the heroin smuggling routes that originates from Afghanistan.
They come down through a well-known smack truck trade route, and the drugs, they are not for the Seychelles consumption. For Seychelles, is only around 2 or 3 packets. The rest are destined for European markets.
But the narcotics problem doesn't just stay on this side of the globe, says Adam Lutfi, who manages the U.S. Embassy in Seychelles.
Because if you look at the drug traffic, it's coming through this region, but it's not stopping here. It's moving on to Africa, it's moving on to Europe, and potentially to North America too.
Along the way, some of the heroin inevitably ends up on the local market, leading to the heroin epidemic here. The US and China, which are competing for influence in Seychelles, are helping in different ways with the drug problem. The Chinese embassy declined an interview with VOA. The Chinese ambassador to Seychelles wrote in a Seychelles newspaper article in 2024 that China was supporting Seychelles in combating piracy and drug and human trafficking. Again, Hans Radegond of the Seychelles Coast Guard.
So far, we have not received any training from China in regards to the drug trafficking, but they do provide training to our officers. We send them overseas to China. They also provide us with assets. Specifically, we have one vessel, which is in our fleet, operating.
The U.S. is doing its part here, says Lutfi.
We do a lot of cooperation with Seychelles Defense Forces, Coast Guard in particular, on drug interdiction and other sorts of marine security concerns that are here.
For Romeo, all of his energy is focused on sticking with the methadone program.
I want to see my mom happy. I don't want to see her cry.
He has been clean for over a year now and hopes to get his methadone dosage down soon and, eventually, stop completely. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Mahé, Seychelles.
President-elect Donald Trump wants to slash government spending. A proposed advisory commission called the Department of Government Efficiency will lead the effort. It's not a new concept. As VOA Dora McQuar reports, American leaders have tried to reduce the role of government almost since the beginning.
Billionaire businessman Elon Musk wants to slash $2 trillion in federal spending. He'll be co-head of the Department of Government Efficiency, a proposed Donald Trump presidential advisory commission. It's not the first time a U.S. administration has pledged to cut government expenses, says Justin Vaughn, an associate professor of political science at Coastal Carolina University in South Carolina.
Presidents have been talking in one way or another about downsizing or reducing the role of government since the founding of the republic.
It started with America's third president, Thomas Jefferson, in the early 1800s. Jefferson eliminated some military and government jobs, temporarily lowering costs.
I'm convinced that at least 4 million have been given employment.
In the 1930s, Franklin Delano Roosevelt expanded the federal workforce to cope with the Great Depression. Roosevelt's New Deal employed millions, providing relief for the poor while stimulating the economy. The jobs ended once the crisis was over.
I, Ronald Reagan, do solemnly swear.
In the 1980s, Ronald Reagan formed the Grace Commission, asking the group of about 150 business leaders to find ways to eliminate inefficiency. Tom Schatz is president of the group Citizens Against Government Waste.
President Reagan asked the Grace Commission to look at the government with an eye towards making it work more like a business.
But the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library website says that most of the recommendations, especially those requiring legislation from Congress, were never implemented. Still, some historians say Reagan succeeded in shifting the national conversation in favor of a smaller role for the federal government in solving public problems, according to Vaughn.
It was a fundamental sea change from, you know, the previous century, really, of expansion of the role of government in society.
In the 1990s, Bill Clinton worked to cut about 300,000 federal jobs, mostly through retirements and the outsourcing of services. Here's Vaughn's assessment.
Certainly one of the more significant administrations in terms of reducing the role of government of the modern era.
During his first term, Donald Trump ordered a federal hiring freeze and other cuts. Now he wants his Department of Government Efficiency to finish the job. Some question the wisdom of taking a business approach to running the government. Historian James Grossman is executive director of the American Historical Association.
When you're the government, you are responsible to the people. And your goal is not to make money. Your goal is to provide services and defend the nation. There's a lot of fraud and waste in the private sector. So I'm not that sure that business people are necessarily the best people to even find out, to even discover fraud and waste.
Trump and Musk are using one tool to get their point across that wasn't available during past efforts to cut government, according to Schatz.
There can be a faster and more comprehensive response because of social media. Members of Congress tend to respond more to social media than the old-fashioned letters they used to get.
In many cases, Congress has to agree before any cuts can be made. Dora McQuarr, VOA News, Washington.
And in our sports roundup, we have our sports analyst, Mokbilia Barrow, in studio. Thank you for joining us, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Yehiz.
So, in some football news over the weekend, the FA Cup was in full effect for the English club teams. What were some standout games?
If we're going to start it off at the top, Manchester City versus Salford City, 8-0. Nottingham Forest versus Luton Town, 2-0. Chelsea versus Morecambe, 5-0. Liverpool versus Akron Stanley, 4-0. And probably the biggest match over the weekend was Arsenal versus Manchester United. 1-1, two Premier League teams with an extensive history. Manchester United went on penalties. 5-3.
8-0 is an embarrassing trouncing, Mokbil.
Big, big loss.
In the boxing world, Tyson Fury announces his retirement after his second loss to Oleksandr Usyk. Will he stay retired this time?
Great question, Yehiz. He retired in 2013 as well as 2017, and then he made his way back again. Some are saying that this might be another one of those, kind of spur of the moment feelings where he just posts on social media and says that he's retiring because he did not like the decision that was given in that rematch fight. He believes he won the fight against Oleksandr Usyk. So could just take a little while, but he also may be retired for good. I don't really see what other fight that he would make. Maybe an Anthony Joshua fight, as the fans may have wanted, but they would have wanted that fight when he was undefeated.
And that, with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Pete Huntley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.